Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Kathy Spiegel of Illinois Radio Reader. But first, disability news for the week of April 29, 2019. Medicaid funding for people with disabilities could be jeopardized if a handful of states succeed in their efforts to overhaul how they receive federal dollars, according to advocates. At least three states, including Alaska, Tennessee, and Utah, have indicated that they are interested in receiving block grants or per capita funding from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Currently, states receive matching funds from the federal government without a preset limit. If states depart from that approach, they would gain greater flexibility on how to spend the money in exchange for accepting a fixed amount, regardless of actual expenditures. But disability advocacy groups say they are concerned that such a shift would not provide adequate funding for people with disabilities who receive health care or home and community-based services through Medicaid. President Donald Trump's budget proposal last month called for deep cuts to Medicaid and the establishment of block grant funding. In 2017, Congress failed to pass legislation that would implement block grants, and now some advocates say the Trump administration may be circumventing lawmakers to accomplish that goal. Earlier this month in Tennessee, the State House of Representatives passed a bill that would direct the governor to seek a waiver from CMS to receive an annual unspecified lump sum for its Medicaid program, TennCare. A fiscal analysis of the bill found that the level of federal funding was unknown. Current annual federal funding for TennCare is $7.5 billion. In Utah, the state has said it will seek a fixed amount per enrollee on federal contributions for its newly expanded Medicaid program in order to contain costs. Esme Greenwald is the vice president of government relations at the American Network of Community Options and Resources, or ANCOR. Gruel said a move to block grants without congressional approval could result in lawsuits like what has happened in response to the Medicaid work requirement adopted by some states. Some children outgrow autism, researchers say, but losing the diagnosis does not mean these kids are free of challenges. Though autism has traditionally been considered a lifelong condition, evidence in recent years suggests that there are children who recover. Now a new study is offering the largest look yet at what happens to kids who no longer qualify for a label on the spectrum. Researchers looked at clinical records for 569 children diagnosed with autism between 2003 and 2013, when they were 2.5 years old on average. 4 years later, they found that 38 of the kids no longer met the diagnostic criteria for autism. Nonetheless, all but three of the children who lost their autism label had other diagnoses and still needed a level of therapy and supports. Dr. Lisa Schulman of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine led the study published recently in the Journal of Child Neurology. According to Schulman, quote, "It's certainly encouraging to confirm that a subset of children with early ASD diagnosis accompanied by developmental delays can, in essence, recover from the disorder and go on to have typical social and cognitive functioning. But by and large, those children continue to struggle with daily life. Almost all of them still have to contend with language and learning disabilities and a variety of emotional and behavioral problems," end quote. Of those who outgrew the autism label, 68% had language or learning disabilities, the study found. Meanwhile, 49% had attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or similar behavioral issues. About a quarter had a mood, anxiety, or obsessive compulsive disorder or selective mutism, and a small percentage had a psychotic disorder. Said Schulman, quote, "The message from our study is that some of our kids do amazingly well, but most of them have persistent difficulties requiring ongoing monitoring and therapeutic support, end quote. And finally, lawmakers in several states are trying to ban a widely used pesticide that the Environmental Protection Agency is fighting to keep on the market. The pesticide, chlorpyrifos, kills insects on contact by attacking their nervous system. Several studies have linked prenatal exposure of chlorpyrifos to lower birth rates, lower IQs, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and other developmental issues in children. But the EPA in 2017 ignored the conclusion of its scientists and rejected a proposal made during the Obama administration to ban its use in fields and orchards. Hawaii was the first state to pass a full ban last year. Now California, Oregon, New York, and Connecticut are trying to do the same. Should California succeed, the action could have a big impact, as California is the biggest agricultural state. Earlier this year, congressional Democrats also introduced bills to ban the pesticide nationally, but experts believe states are more likely to succeed than Congress, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand says, who, by the way, is running for president. She introduced a separate bill last week that would prohibit schools from serving fruits and vegetables sprayed with that pesticide. Almost two decades ago, the EPA, which regulates pesticides at the federal level, ordered chlorpyrifos for residential use off the market. But the chemical is still used on crops, including citrus, almonds, and grapes, and on golf courses and other non-agricultural settings. Globally, several companies make chlorpyrifos products. In the U.S., the most recognized brand names are Dursban and Lorsban, manufactured by Corteva AgriScience, formerly known as Dow AgroSciences. Under the administration of President Barack Obama, the EPA in 2015 proposed a complete ban of chlorpyrifos, citing evidence of health risks. But in 2017, President Donald Trump's EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, declined to ban it. Then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered the pesticide completely off the market last summer, and the EPA is fighting that decision. Farmers also testified that the state already restricts the use of chlorpyrifos through the Department of Pesticide Regulation. Any additional restrictions should be left to the department, they urged. Based on the department's recommendations, all California counties this year agreed to strict restrictions on chlorpyrifos application, including a ban on aerial spraying. For ground-based applications, farmers cannot apply the pesticide within 150 feet of houses, businesses, and schools. The department considers the pesticide a, quote, toxic air contaminant, and believes the new restrictions will reduce its use. Angel Garcia, a community organizer with the group Californians for Pesticide Reform, said the new restrictions aren't tough enough. He said, quote, those who face the most risk are largely the low-income people of color who live in agricultural areas, end quote. And that's the news for this week.
You're just like poison, slowly moving through my system, breaking all of my defenses with time. You're just like poison, and I just don't get it. How could something so deadly feel so right? I'm not sure what to do. It's a catch 22, cause the cure is found in you. I don't want it, but I do. You're just like poison, my affliction.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today in the studio by Kathy Spiegel, who is the director?
Coordinator
of Illinois Radio Reader, a program that has been featured years ago. So I'm anxious to hear from Kathy and about all the exciting stuff that they're doing and providing for the community. So welcome to the program, Kathy.
Thanks.
So let's start out by you can introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know who you are and why you do what you do.
Well, like you said, my name is Kathy Spiegel. I've been in the community since 1990 in various capacities, always worked for not-for-profits, which brings me a lot of joy. When this position opened up, it was because I knew the community very well. And it's been a joy because I'm getting to work directly with volunteers on a daily basis, and we are providing a much needed service for people with disabilities.
And how long has Radio Reader been in existence?
This is our 41st year.
41st year. And how many years have you been with them?
This is my sixth year.
Okay. So really kind of a fresh face in the grand scheme of things, right?
A little bit, yes. Because my predecessor had been here almost 20 years.
So why don't we start out with just kind of a little bit of a summary on what Radio Reader is and what it does provide to the community.
What it does provide is what we call a sound connection. We broadcast on the air readings of the newspapers, both local and some far away, like the Washington News, the Baltimore News. We do the News Gazette, mm-hmm. the Bloomington paper, the paper from the Herald and Review from Decatur. We do Vermilion County every day. We do Christian Science Monitor every day. And we read articles for either a half hour or an hour for people who can't read on their own. It could be a physical or a visual disability that keeps them from being able to read printed material.
Mm-hmm. And so do you read let's use the News Gazette for an example.
Well, we start out by reading the local news first. So mm-hmm. basically you start with the front page. Anything that's marked Urbana or Champaign County, we cover that first. And that usually takes about a half an hour. And then the second half, we go in to finish up the local news. We always do the obituaries for every community. And depending on, like today, from Sunday's paper, there were three pages of obituaries. Mm. We make sure that we cover our generalized local area. Anything from Vermilion County, we wait and save that for their broadcast. But anything in this area, we do here. Then we finish up. We may pick a national piece. We may do some sport news. We may read Dear Abby. It mm-hmm. just depends on the time frame. So if you've only got 3 minutes left, you can't start a long article.
Right. And so it's limited to an hour.
To an hour. We have 2 half-hour readings of all of those newspapers, except for Vermilion County, which is a half hour each day.
Okay. And so how do you, obviously you have to look at the paper in advance and choose what you're going to read. Who does all that organization?
On the hard copies that we get, I go through the paper and just red X so people can scan the page very quickly and find it. In this day and age, we don't get hard copies of most of the papers. They come electronically, so the readers have two screens. One screen has the paper up, so they're reading it off the screen, mm-hmm. and the other screen that they're using is their audio recording. So the reader actually gets to pick what they're going to read.
Oh.
So what we say is, no matter what it is in print, you read it just the way it's written. You don't editorialize. You don't make comments. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the news can be pretty gross. And you don't let that come through in your reading. You just read the words.
You have to be very objective.
You do. And
no judgment.
No judgment, but we want people to be personal about it. So I like to say, think about reading to your grandmother or your neighbor or your aunt, and just read to that person. Don't worry about being professional. Don't worry about stumbling over words. Even when we're talking to someone casually, we repeat ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So who is this intended to serve?
It is intended to serve anyone in our greater Champaign area who can't read on their own. So we say print impaired as opposed to visually handicapped, because you can have physical handicaps that prevent you from holding a paper. Your hands shake. So somebody that has some kind of Alzheimer's that makes their hands shake, mm-hmm. They will not be able to read the written word. So it can be either visual or physical. If they can't read the written word, the printed word, then they're eligible.
Okay. And so now, how do people access the service?
Well, usually people will call. And they will ask us, how do I do this? And then I fill them in on the information. We also go to low vision fairs in the area. I met you again this year at the disability fair, and we had quite a few radios that we sent out. So people say, you know, this would really work for my mom, or this is something I think I could use because I can't read on my own anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They fill out an application. If they qualify, I send them a receiver at no cost. And all they have to do is plug it in and turn it on.
So it's essentially just a radio like you would have mm-hmm. on your kitchen counter.
Right,
whatever.
But it's a sub-channel. So it's a channel you can't get on anything else other than one of these.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't cost anything to get it. The other way to get us is on the internet. So if you are computer savvy or you have someone in your family that can go to our website, we have a Clearstream. and you just press the listen now button and you'll hear as clear as a bell.
Interesting. Yes. So you should get an app, right?
Well, you don't really need an app. If you go to the WILL website, we have our own page, and you go to our page and just hit listen now. What I'm working on is getting us into Alexa and the Echo Dot so that you can listen to us. Hey, Alexa, how about Illinois Radio Reader? So that's our next step.
Somebody's Alexa who is listening to the program right now just popped on
and answered
the question. I don't know the answer to that question.
But you have to have a router for that. You've got to be connected to the internet, and a lot of older Americans are not. Mm-hmm. And people who live in rural areas or people who are in extended care facilities may not have access to the internet.
Do you have any idea how many people, well, I'm sure you know how many people have the actual receivers in their homes?
We have about 400 of those out in the whole area.
Wow.
And when we do Google Analytics to try to find out how many people are accessing us over the internet, and it's usually about 300 a month who are tapping into the page, and they may want to just listen to the News Gazette. So if you scroll down on our page, I put up that broadcast every day, so you don't have to have your radio on when it's being broadcast. Mm-hmm. You can go and pull that file up and listen to it anytime. But again, you have to have a computer.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're listening to it on the receiver, when you turn it on, you just get what you get. There's no scrolling through and skipping the sports page or anything
that. Nope, you're stuck with the whole thing.
So there's definitely an advantage to doing it online. Now, you said that people have to qualify to get an actual receiver in their home. For the online version, are there qualifications?
No. Mm-mm. We predicate everything we publish or say with the caveat that this broadcast is intended for people with print-impaired abilities, and we assume that if you are accessing it, that's what you're doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't require any kind of password or any kind of registration.
Yeah, well, I could see this being really attractive to people who are in the car for a long time in the morning and don't have a chance to read the newspaper.
If they've got a cell phone and they can pull up the Illinois Radio Reader page on their cell phone, I do this all the time on the weekends, and just hit the listen now on their cell phone, they can listen to us.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty amazing. So this is a volunteer service.
Yes, it is.
All your readers are volunteers. How many readers do you have currently?
I have about 52 on the list. That includes all of our regular readers who have agreed to take a specific slot, and then I have about 15 subs who will fill in when people are out of town or death in the family, or they need to go take care of their grandchild, or they've got a doctor's appointment and they can't come in.
Mm-hmm.
And those subs are really important, because when I come in the morning and I've got three messages that say I'm not coming in today, I'm getting kind of desperate.
Yeah.
But the subs are really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an amazing, how do you choose the people? Because I'm sure you get a lot of people calling you saying, hey, I'd like to do this. I like to read the paper. I'm a good reader. How do you sort through those?
I know this sounds terrible. We have such a blessing of riches. I have people on my waiting list since 2017, because once these people volunteer and get into it, they don't want to leave. But I keep you on the waiting list. And when somebody decides they don't want to do it anymore or move away, I just go to the next person on the list. You come in. We have a little orientation, practice reading, practice using the technology, because there is a little bit of a learning curve, as you know, when you're broadcasting. Our biggest problem probably is people who are avid readers who think they read really well. But when you read to yourself, you read really fast, and you don't read every word. You don't read is the and. When you're reading out loud, you have to do that, and you have to pronounce your consonants.
Yes.
So especially younger readers who aren't used to doing that, we just have to say slow down. So I don't want you to sound artificial or stilted in your reading, but you have to remember that as we get older, our hearing isn't as acute as it used to be. So we need to hear those consonants and the ings on the ends of words.
Absolutely. I do, here at the radio station, I do public affairs training. And so I tell folks that if you're reading something on the air, if you're recording it or broadcasting it either way, that you really have to think about what you're reading. Otherwise, it just sounds like you're reading.
Yes.
So is that something that you have?
Some people are better than that about that than others. Some people just read. And but they've been doing it a long time, and I the only time I will ask if someone's ready to retire, quote unquote, is if I find that they forget to save a recording or leave big gaps in their recording. Usually they'll come to me and say, I think it's time for me to not do this anymore, because it's really hard to let a volunteer go, you know.
Yeah, but it sounds like you have a lot of them waiting in the wings,
we do,
too.
We do.
So as technology improves, do you see that the radio receiver part of this program going away? Is it going to go completely online in 20 years or so?
Well, maybe in 20 years, not in the near future. After we finished the disability fair here and I did another low vision fair in Decatur, I sent out 6 radios in a week.
Oh, wow.
So people are still requesting those because a lot of older Americans just don't have access to a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know how to use adaptive equipment with the screen to blow it up big enough so that they can do that on their own, or to be able to use magnification of a newspaper. So the need is still there. And as the baby boomers move into the senior citizen range, which they are now doing, those diseases that affect older Americans, they're estimating about 3 million more a year are going to need help with reading.
Yeah, wow. And so I'm thinking, though, that the receiver, you know, sending out the receivers is a good way of managing and knowing what exactly the impact is that your program is having.
We don't hear back too often from readers unless there's something, like if we go off the air for some reason, I'll get a phone call. But our readers are seem to be very happy with the program. Occasionally we will do telephone calls and ask them what their favorite show is. Are they listening? And the majority of them are very nice to talk to, but a lot of them are bedridden and just aren't into conversation. Now, if I can get a hold of their families and talk to their caregivers, they're very supportive of the program.
So you get a receiver. Is it for a certain period of time?
No.
Or once you get it, you have it? And
we just say that if you are no longer using it, please return it.
And if people move, they're not going to be able to get the broadcast, right?
No, because every area that has a service like this has a different band that they use.
Okay. All right. So what other things are important for people to know about Illinois Radio Reader?
Well, I think the most important thing for us is that if you have someone in your family or your church group or in a social setting, and you know that they're having difficulties, ask them if that would be a service that they would like, or call me and I will be more than happy to give them a call. We're very lucky that a lot of the eye doctors in the area, the optometrists, caregivers, home health care people know about our service, and they will approach their client with that, and then they'll let me know that that's something that they would like. And I'm more than happy to make home visits if it's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing resource. So if people want to get in touch with you and become recipients of a receiver or access the program in some way, how do they do that?
Well, our phone number is 217-333-6503. I am in the office every day from 7 to noon. And if I don't answer the phone, please do leave a message and I will get back with you. The other way is if you have access to a computer, you can go to our website. If you just Google Illinois Radio Reader, our page pops right up. And our web news is in there. The program is there with the listing of all the programs. There is an application there that you can download and print off. So we try to get everything on that one page so it's easy to access.
Yeah. So just before we finish up, is there anything that you can think of that is just a really unusual thing that happened with Illinois Radio Reader, or something, a funny story that you can share with the listeners?
Well, one of the things we do on Friday is four local newspapers. So we do Rantoul, Piatt County, Mahomet, and Monticello. And one of my readers has a daughter that lives in San Antonio, Texas, and she grew up in Mahomet. So she knows that if she turns on the radio on Fridays at 12:30, she can listen to her dad read the radio, read the paper, and she'll listen to it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really a great resource for the community, and I look forward to maybe checking out that website, which was the WILL website or Google.
I would Google Illinois Radio Reader because then it pops
the easiest.
Right up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the phone number again?
217-333-6503. Leave a message, please.
You're not going to pick up the phone right away?
Well, you know, I get robocalls just like everybody else.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If no one leaves a message, I very rarely will return just an odd phone number.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yes, definitely leave a message then. The number 217-333-6503 and talk to Kathy Spiegel.
Right.
The director of Illinois Radio Reader.
Thanks for having me in today, Vicki.
Thank you for coming in. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
Stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. That was Disability Beat for this week. And tune in next week for another interview. Can't tell you what it is at the moment, but we'll have somebody on the air. And it will be the local, state, national news and all kinds of information and so forth regarding disability issues. Before we get on to the next program, which is Rootstock Radio, let me read the Art Theater listing for this week. Screening daily is Amazing Grace, the 1972 documentary that presents the live recording of Aretha Franklin's album Amazing Grace at the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church in Watts, Los Angeles. The film was lost in technical limbo and premiered November of 2018 and screened as the opening film of this year's Ebert Fest. The Art Theater on Tuesday, April 30th, that's tomorrow, celebrates UNESCO International Jazz Day with Women of Jazz, an inside look. This film, which shows at 5:30 p.m., showcases women who earned respect in the jazz world as instrumentalists, composers, arrangers, and bandleaders. Their stories are told through historical movies featuring the international sweethearts of rhythm, Lil Hardin, Marion McPartland, Melba Liston, Mary Lou Williams, and many others. The movie will be followed by a 7 p.m. gathering at the Esquire Lounge in downtown Champaign. And I thought that was okay. It's at the Esquire in downtown Champaign, and they will be having live music. For detail on the schedule, visit theartheater.org. And in a moment here, we're going to have a recording of Rootstock Radio. Before that, though, if you made a pledge to WEFT during our spring pledge drive, we thank you and we depend on your donations